in our meeting with Sridhar, he brought out that if you really want to contribute to people, you need to first learn how to make your own money. Because once you learn how to make your own money, you have a way to survive. And then if you can survive, you can also spend time contributing to lives of people.
This podcast is brought to you by ACTA. ACTA is an AI-powered meeting minutes tool, which helps in generating the meeting minutes in the text format. Classify meeting into action items and key points. Invite ACTA Virtual Assistant on any platform like Teams, Zoom, WebEx, Google Meet, and see the magic unfold. Give a try and explore this opportunity with a $10 free credit for the first-time users. Visit ACTA.AI for more information. Hey, welcome to the CLL podcast. Today we have with us Kedar. The more we read about HyperVerge, the more warm feeling you get to work with the HyperVerge company. How did this happen, Kedar?
We started out as a bunch of students from IIT Madras. We used to represent IIT Madras and Institute and India in robotics in some competitions. And each year we used to participate in these competitions. After that, we transformed into a research group where we would work on challenging AI and machine learning problems. So, and there was no certificate for this activity. There was no recognition for this activity. IIT did not, there was no this thing. This was something that used to happen in a lab called Center for Innovation. So each year we would start with maybe about 100 people that we would start training. And we would end up with 4 or 5 extremely passionate people. And since there was no reward for doing this, the only people who stayed back were people who were extremely passionate about working on technology and who absolutely enjoyed working with each other. So it was like a family. So in some way, the kind of relationship which we had with each other as a group of students and friends, that got carried forward when HyperVerge began. HyperVerge began 4 years after the research group started. That carried forward, and I think that's the fundamental of it's one of the key fundamentals with respect to the relationships that you see at HyperVerge, the warmth that you might feel at HyperVerge.
Absolutely, Kedar, and it speaks volumes, like the number of co-founders you have and how you're still running the company. So you started HyperVerge in 2014, as you said, like 4 years later, on that aspect with consumer AI products in mind. During the grind, you met Zoho's CEO and he challenged you to go after 500K in the time that you have left because you're looking out to make products. And then you met the goal also, right? We know this journey because you have spoken about it on your website and ample of articles are also written on it. However, we wanted to deep dive into how you and your whole team picked yourselves up and then took up the challenge. And then within that challenge, how did the first 10, 20 days look like? And then how did you ultimately make that 500K happen?
I'll give a quick background on what had happened before we met Sridhar Vembu and then what happened after we met him. So before we met Sridhar Vembu, 2014, we went to the US to demonstrate our technology as a research group to some alums, and we wanted to do a Kickstarter campaign to raise about $50,000 in funding. But people liked the technology so much that we ended up coming back with almost $1 million in funding. And that was a huge thing at that time, because imagine a college team just going to raise $50,000 comes back with $1 million in funding. After that, for about a couple of years, was a phase when we were trying to build out consumer apps. And the one app that we were extremely focused on was, we all take so many pictures and we don't have a way to search through our old pictures. When we are looking for a particular photo, that I want to find a photo of myself, say with a friend at a beach or something like that, it's very difficult to find that photo. So we realized that through the latest developments in AI, using face recognition, using scene recognition, etc., we would be able to build a technology platform where if a person uploads all their photos, you have the ability to search through your photos. It's like a search engine on top of pictures. And we worked on this for 9 months after we got funded, and maybe 3-4 months before we got funded. And in 2015, as we were maybe about 2 months away from launching our app, it was called Silver. Google Photos launched an update, and that update basically made this entire functionality available on Google Photos. It was available for free, and it was the default Photos app on millions of Android phones. So there was no way to compete with something like that. So something that we had worked on for a year, kind of, the entire effort was taken away by that one launch that happened from Google as Google Photos. After that, we tried pivoting, we tried doing other things, we tried changing direction into other kind of photo apps that can help users. We built a lot of very solid technology in the place at that time, be it face recognition, very high accuracy engines that can work at very low bandwidth, with very high quality scene recognition. We built many pieces of technology, seamless transfer of pictures between phones without using internet. So lot of very high quality pieces of technology were developed, but most of the apps that we were building were not getting adoption. They were not getting 500,000 downloads, million downloads, etc. Right? All of them had under 1 lakh downloads. And we did not have many ideas on how to scale it beyond that. We had tried out all ideas that we knew. So this was the time when this was around maybe end of 2016, 2 years into the company, where HyperVerge was known for very high quality technology. So we were getting a lot of inbound interest in terms of acquiring the company. We had interest from some of the global top tech companies in the world. And it was a good acquisition. If we would have gone down that path, it would have been like a double digit million acquisition. So it would have been a good outcome per se, right? You start a company and in 2 years it gets acquired for double digit million. That's not a bad outcome. And we were only a team of about 13 people at that time. However, somehow all of us that our journey ending at this point in this way was not what we had set out to do. So when we started reflecting on it, we decided to take a few days off to focus on understanding what is it that we are really passionate about doing. If money, society, what people expect from you, pressure of being successful, if all of these things are thrown out of the window and none of those things are there, then what kind of work will we do? In short, what kind of work we may do if we are not even getting paid? And all of us realize that we want to do work that can contribute in a significant way to lives of people. And that is something that we all could very passionately agree upon. Now, the important question was, how do we go about doing something like this, right? We have only 6 months or 7 months of money left at that point. So how do we go about with just 7 months runway, contributing to people's life, be it through education or be it through rural employment, because before we know that money will run out. So that was the time when we met
Absolutely.
Sridhar Vembu. And I think that those set of meetings made a very profound difference in our journey as such.
Absolutely. And as you said, when you're selecting your team, you'd already set the foundation and you're like reinventing that same foundation while you're shifting towards creating products that are going to impact a lot of people. So when you met the Zoho CEO and then now you wanted to take a turn around what needs to be done. So what was the those days where you met the Zoho CEO and then you wanted to do things? So did you immediately identify the product that you're going to be working on, or like your team came together, huddled together, identified the ideas and then went with it? And what then led to basically the digital KYC?
A very good question. So in our meeting with Sridhar, he brought out that if you really want to contribute to people, you need to first learn how to make your own money. Because once you learn how to make your own money, you have a way to survive. And then if you can survive, you can also spend time contributing to lives of people. Now the question was, how do we get about 500K, which was the money that we need to earn in our first year, right? Where will that money come from? Sridhar said a nice thing that you need 500K to survive, and some part of that can come through Zoho. So one thing was very clear that Zoho can be one of our first clients, and we started a lot of effort in that direction. Now you asked that very clear about what product will we build, what will make us money, what will get product market fit. I would say absolutely the opposite. I think we had absolutely no clue how will we get there. But we created a thesis where we said, wherever there are people processing 100 million plus images, our skills are extremely valuable because usually there is a huge difference in something being 90% accurate, 95% accurate, 99.5% accurate. Hyperverge plays in that zone of 99.5% accuracy. And that accuracy becomes really, really, really important when you are looking at 100 million images, because imagine 10% errors on 100 million is a huge number of errors that are happening. So basis that, we actually went after 8 different problems because we were trying to figure out what would enterprises want. And we looked at different sectors. So we looked at manufacturing, we looked at ATM and security kind of applications. We looked into the automation of traffic management, the fines, etc., that happen. So we looked at various areas wherever we thought there are 100 million plus images that are being processed. Through one of our advisors, we got connected to a leader named Kalidas Ghosh, who is the CEO of FeCredit, which is one of the leading fintech companies. And when we explained Kalidas about our capabilities and the technology that we had built, he could see an application of it in his business for the KYC process. So that time it was not even very clearly called KYC. It was basically customer verification. So we started building with Kalidas and FeCredit. 60-70% of our learning actually came from our client itself. They taught us what kind of frauds happen, how a customer verification or a KYC process happens, and how, finding each fraudulent case may save $1,000 for them or $2,000 for them. So a huge part of our learning came from our client, and that's how we got to the product market fit.
And another thing, while you're speaking about this, there was this fraud that happens in digital KYC, and your products basically has learned to deal with it. Like, for example, taking an image and trying to verify it, and you have successfully solved that. So can you let our audience know how that challenge you identified and solved it also through AI?
KYC is needed every time you are opening a bank account, you're applying for a loan, you're applying for a credit card, and a whole lot of other SIM card, many other functions. Now, many of these, if you reflect, are very prone to fraud, right? If you can get a fake loan or something like that, you can run away with that money. You can, if you get a SIM card, like as in if you get a real SIM card on a fake account or something like that, you can do many things with it. So all of these are places where there is a high motivation for fraudsters to break through, because they can actually make money if they break through. So we started in terms of solving the problem. You can imagine, like any team that hasn't had any experience in this area, we had very little experience. So we had to learn a lot on the job. When we were working with some of our partners, early partners, we looked through data of what kind of frauds have they faced, what kind of challenges are they facing with respect to fraud. And we used a lot of that learning wherever there were manual processes, which were catching maybe a limited percentage of frauds that were happening. We started taking those learnings and converting them into AI modules, which were, we started catching like 90% of the fraud, eventually 95% of fraud. And today that number is much higher. So a whole lot of learning again came from clients. It came from what kind of frauds they had seen, received, etc. Also, fraud is an area where it is impossible for you to have a foolproof solution for too long, because as they say, as our defense becomes stronger, people also adopt and they figure out newer ways to fool the
Find a
system.
loophole, yes.
So we always have to anticipate what they would do. We have internal teams trying out many experiments. Some parts we are able to anticipate successfully, some parts they break through. but we try to ensure that in a matter of few days, we plug that gap, right? Like we create a new piece of technology that is that stops them getting through. So it's little bit of a cat and mouse kind of a game.
Absolutely, and you are at pressure to absolutely stay ahead all the times.
Yeah, so we did last year 280 million KYC across multiple clients just in India. So you can imagine if all critical systems like telecom, fintech, all these clients, what could be the implications of fraud? So they keep us on our toes with respect to all these cases.
So speaking of a scale like this, or the number of users that you have, technology or the hardware that goes behind it plays a big role in it, right? And so are there any team members in your company that solely initially focused on building the hardware structure or reducing that time for verification, all of that? And how does that look like? Like, how did you manage the hardware challenges to serve these many customers?
So it started with taking a clear call very early that we are not going to do this on-premise, because we could see that there is no on-prem that can possibly handle this scale super reliable manner. So we, the first important decision that at least for this kind of scale, we have to be on cloud. And then who could be the right partners on the cloud that can provide us this kind of scale and flexibility. So one important decision was that. There were many other decisions. When you are looking at 280 million kind of a scale, the technology challenges on it are varied. You can imagine the AI engine has to work at this scale, which means it should not be that in one state of India it is letting people through and in other state because the photos look different or something like that, your AI engines are performing in a different way. So those things are called as biases. So we had to ensure that our AI engines perform and that they don't have any biases. We have to ensure that at 280 million scale, imagine the number of devices that are there. There are our technology that year was working on 100,000 unique Android devices. So each of these devices come with their own nuances that we have to solve for. Also, at this scale, you can imagine that the split is completely across the spectrum. We are looking at rural population, we are looking at urban population, semi-urban population. You are getting all kinds of bandwidth. Someone might be using a very low bandwidth 2G connection and someone can be using a 4G connection. And how do you manage that? And then the stability of the platform itself, right, that you mentioned, that it should scale as demand increases seamlessly, there should not be downtime, and all of these challenges. So these are and many more that I'm not articulating right now. So the good part of our team is that through all of this time we were still a very small team. When we hit that number, we still were a team of about just 40 people managing these number of users. So because it's also a small team that has worked with each other for such a long time, it's extremely, the people work extremely well together. Whenever challenges come, it's not like, this is not my area, I won't deal with this, etc. Everyone is aware about most things. So we basically had two set of challenges. One was on the business side of things, business model, etc. And other was on the tech side of things. The tech side of challenges were led by Vignesh and Sai, who are my co-founders. Vignesh is our CTO, Sai is our head of engineering. And they worked very closely with our core team on solving these problems. The business side of challenges were led by the other co-founders, right? And the core team members that were working on it.
Absolutely. And as you can see, it's a unique company with so many founders, and you have already set that intention or the team very well so that it withers through a lot of challenges. We've also seen that you are getting into video KYC with SBI. And can you give us the need of making such a shift? Digital KYC was getting done, but now why video KYC? And what difference does it make?
It really starts with the regulator, very proactive regulator. They continue to understand what are the new technologies that are out there, what could be the new ways that they can make available to financial institutions to serve their customers. So the regulator came out with, it started with eKYC, then we came out with digital KYC. Like that, this year the regulator came out with video KYC, which is a way to onboard a customer using video. Now, once the regulator launches that this is something that they are allowing, now there are all of us who are technology partners as well as the financial services, big giants such as SBI, etc. Everyone pays attention to, okay, how can the latest regulation change or latest opening up of regulation can be used to serve the customers better. And so that led to the demand for it, right? Like suddenly now we are all exploring or experimenting together. How can we possibly use video KYC to serve the customers better? Coming to working with SBI, working with large organizations on video KYC. See, SBI is a household name, right? In any house you go in India, you say SBI, any language, any state, people know SBI. In fact, I have seen SBI branches in Nepal also. So it's such a household name that it's in a way reaching possibly every household of India in one way or the other. Now, for someone like SBI, it's very important that now, especially in COVID times, when people are not able to go to branches, people are not able to beat pensioners or beat anyone, right? Everyone is afraid of going to a branch to do something. How can they provide an alternate way for people to get a credit card, to apply for a loan, and so many other? And that, I think, led to the huge investment from them towards solution.
And I think, again, your existing experience sort of transfers now into the video world of doing things.
Correct.
So now that we have spoken about your main product that you have, let's focus on some things that you have mentioned about solving real world problems. And education seems to be of big interest to you. You also told that you started it in IIT with Lemma Labs, teaching a lot of students, and that's how you basically have your co-founders today. So by any chance, you are working on anything on the education portion here, and what are some of the ideas that you're currently working in this part of it?
After meeting Sridhar, we had decided that as per his guidance, we will first figure out company survival. The moment we are now clear that the company is going to survive, right? We are able to make our expenditure happen through the revenue that we make, and it is happening consistently over a year or so. We will start effort towards, very active effort towards contributing to people. Now, coming to education, see, when we look at India, our country is full of so many challenges. And one of the biggest challenges is that income levels are very low, right? Recently, if you read, our per capita GDP is in fact even lower than Bangladesh as of today. So it's very important that we are able to increase the income of a household, right? If there is a family of four, there has to be an effort into how can this same family, instead of making maybe 10,000 rupees a month or 7,000 rupees a month, can we take this family to a place like 20,000, 30,000, 40,000 a month, right? By providing them skills, etc. So if we look at traditionally how a family's economic ability changed, one of the oldest tools in our thing has always been education. That is why there is so much emphasis on education in India, where even if the parents in a family were not literate, they would want their kids to, you know, learn so that the kids at least can ensure that the family gets out of poverty. So from that point of view, education is very close to our heart. It is a tool where the negative impact possible is very limited and the positive impact could be very high.
Absolutely.
So that reason education is important. Now coming to the efforts that we are trying to do in this direction, Lemma Labs has existed for 10 years, and the main idea of Lemma Labs was to make emerging technologies, the education related to emerging technologies such as machine learning, robotics, etc., available to every a middle class student out there, where through 1 month of a middle class family's salary, a student should be able to learn these technologies, because this is exactly the way we learned it. All our parents are, we all come from a very middle class family. No one comes from a family of means. But we were able to do what we are able to do because of
Education.
the exposure with respect to technology that we got. So Lemma Labs is working on that area. Hyperverse specifically, what we are doing is right now the initiative that we have, our goal is to take 2,000 families out of cycle of disadvantage or cycle of poverty, as you can call it. One of the efforts that we are doing is when these families have kids who are maybe in the range of 20 to 25, and currently if they are certain job, right, like a BPO job or something like that, we are seeing how can we teach them technology which will allow the same person to earn, instead of 15,000 rupees if they learn front end development, the same person can be learning 30,000 rupees, and that extra 15,000 can be used to get his family or her family out of the debts that they have or so many other things. So that is an initiative that we have started, and we have our first batch of students that we are working with to hopefully bring them out of this cycle of disadvantage very soon.
Great initiative, Kedar. Now, coming to one of the mindsets in the education, right? Not all of them are having that mindset to adopt or learn technology and then apply it. So, do you see some level of scrutiny that you provide to teach, or is there a level of teaching that you do such that anybody can get technology, right? So, I wanted to get your thoughts around that. I myself have done so many batches, and there are those sect of people, and there are those few people that actually get it, and there is a large segment of people that don't get it, or they are not able to learn these technologies. So, do you see the similar patterns, and are you trying to do something different in terms of teaching them or exposing to the ML and AI education?
Very good question and very good observation. I would like to point out that there is a problem that is even more fundamental than this, which is a lot of people actually know decently well how to build things, meaning they know technology hands-on, but they have not so good communication, because of which they are losing out on opportunities. So for a whole lot of people like that, even if they just get a little bit good at communication, if someone guides them over a period of say 3 to 4 months, they can actually get a lot of good job opportunities, etc. So that is one segment. Now coming to people who, for where learning technology itself is a challenge, like you pointed out, we are very a lot of experience in Lemma Labs taught us one thing, that if someone is not inspired or motivated, then they cannot be taught, right? So the first job is to inspire them. If they cannot be inspired to learn, then anything that we teach will not be grasped, right? And technology particularly is such that usually any person like a Hyperverge or Lemma Labs can only light a spark, but there already has to be a lot of fuel already out there that will catch fire. In most of my students, I have seen that they just need someone who will give them direction, support them through that time, talk to them like a friend, guide them. But they already have the most critical part of it, which is hunger to learn, hunger to grow. So everywhere where we find that students have that hunger, I have seen communication or nothing comes in the way of them progressing. Where things can be challenging is where that hunger to learn or hunger to grow, for some reason, be it social, be it their life situations, etc., because of some reason that hunger to grow or learn has been killed or is low, right? There it becomes very challenging.
Absolutely. And a very interesting point, Kedar. It's basically, seek and you should get what they, if you can, think on spirituality line. Nice. Another initiative you mentioned about, Kedar, is supporting nano entrepreneurs. Can you tell us who falls under this criteria of nano entrepreneurs, and also can you tell us about some of the initiative on the nano entrepreneurs or supporting nano entrepreneurs?
So the nano entrepreneur initiative actually happened as a very good, accident to us. As COVID happened, fortunately, Hyperverge was financially sound. We were not one of the sectors that was hit as bad as many other sectors. Everyone was hit for a couple of months, but we recovered faster than others, I would say. Not because of a great technology team or something, just that we happened to be in a sector that recovered faster as well. Now, in this time, we are seeing that people are losing jobs and a whole lot of unemployment is out there. Even day-to-day sustenance is becoming a challenge and our salaries are intact, right? We are getting our monthly salary. So there was an initiative inside Hyperverge to support a certain set of families. We said we will adopt a certain set of families through the COVID time, right? So from now to till they find their job again, we will support them. And these are families who someone was a auto driver, someone was a bookkeeper in a biryani shop or something like that, like simple jobs that we see in our day-to-day life. Now, we were supporting all these families. Maybe every alternate month, every alternate week, we would transfer about 1,000 rupees so that they can buy. Government is giving ration, but you need much more than rations, right? You need a toothpaste, you need so many other things, oil, whatnot. So we were supporting them to buy day-to-day essentials through this time. And we realized that there are some of these people who are extremely entrepreneurial. So Vignesh, who is my co-founder, he found that the person he was mentoring or supporting was such that if we just gave her, she had a business idea. If we all she needed was like a 6,000-7,000 rupee loan. And if that is given to her, she already has a clear idea about how to run her own business. A small business, one person, two people business. And we tried that out. We gave her that money and she actually went and people were not getting out of their houses. So she went to a wholesale place. She got a lot of ladies' gowns and this, that and all. The locality that she stayed, she was able to sell it and she was able to start making money, income. Whereas for many months, her income was zero. The one of the people I was mentoring, he was an auto guy. And after talking to him for a while, I realized that before being an auto driver some years back, he actually used to sell vegetables, onion, garlic, etc. And all he needed was like a support of 10,000 rupees. And he went and bought onion, garlic, ginger, things like that, potato. And he knew how to sell it. He knew where to buy it from. So he had all the knowledge already. And in his first, and he's so good at that every month now he's able to make at least 10,000 rupees for his family. All that was needed from us is to give that initial 10,000 rupees to a person who already knows what they want to do if they had that 10,000 rupees. And instead of giving him 1,000 rupees each 15 days for sustenance, it's much better to give him that money, which gives him the pride to run his own business, his so many things. So that was the inspiration for nano entrepreneurs. And we were also looking at which organizations are doing a great job in this area. We found Udyam, which is way ahead of us. They have been doing this for a long time. And we have now partnered with Udyam. They bring a lot of domain knowledge. We bring in our expertise with respect to technology. So now we are seeing how can together we take this to, instead of 20, 30 families, can we take this to a number like 2,000 families over this year?
Great initiative, Kedar. One thing I noticed is that you yourself and your co-founders are willingly doing mentorship to these nano entrepreneurs, which I assume then translates back to your company also, right? So mentorship should be, is mentorship a big part or culture of your company? Like you have different levels of mentorship going on throughout the company?
We have thrived on having great mentors because from a student team to running a real business, it takes an entire village to raise a startup. So there have been so many mentors who have selflessly helped us out at so critical juncture. This includes IIT professors, our alums, and so many other people that we came across in life that just helped us and never expected anything in return for that. So in some way, when we are helping out all these nano entrepreneurs, it's like a pay forward, right? Someone did that to us. We need to do that to as many people as we can as well. We need to be there for as many people as we can as well. Not do anything, just be there for them. Yes. Coming to within the organization, I would give you an honest answer. Last year, Hyperverse grew 8x. So we all were just running behind somehow managing that scale, right? Scale. Zero, like from a 1x to an 8x. Mm-hmm. And we, all our systems came under pressure. Everyone was doing maybe double or triple the work that they should be doing, kind of things were happening. So this COVID has given us a big break that way. And in a way that, you know, things are not going as crazy. And we have used the time now to establish strong mentorship frameworks, etc. But I would not say that we did a great job at it last year.
Absolutely. I think so. You're managing scale and a lot of things within this period itself. I think so. The intent is there and it will come through some day or the other. With this, we'll basically go to the rapid fire round for this particular podcast. The first question for this rapid fire round is bootstrapped versus funding. What do you prefer?
I personally would prefer bootstrapped now.
Micromanagement versus macromanagement.
Mentorship more than micromanagement and macromanagement.
Batman versus Superman.
Batman. You know, we can aspire to be Batman. How do we aspire to be a Superman?
Yes, absolutely. And one thing common we see in all tech minds is that Batman comes out as a thriving person. What are the AI solutions closest to your heart?
The closest to my heart is not an AI solution. It's not artificial intelligence. The closest to my heart is yoga, which is, you know, much more sophisticated than any piece of technology that we have right now.
What name do you prefer to use other than human resources?
We don't use human resources at all at Hyperverse. So we use talent acquisition or talent team at Hyperverse, basically. It's nurturing of talent. So I think resources is something I had learned in a program. It gets over, it gets spent. Talent is something that gets honed, right? That gets manifested. So that manifests itself out there in the world. So it's talent.
What is the best compliment you have ever gotten from a client?
That they want to work with us in spite of where they are not able to justify the reason why they want to work with us, but they just want to work with us. We actually had a very large client and I would love to name them. But they, this COVID time and all, they had in-house technology and they had that in-house technology could take over whatever some parts of what we were doing. But they said, no, we still want to work with Hyperverse. And that completely surprised us. In COVID time, everyone is under financial pressure and they also have some in-house technology that can replace parts of what we do, but they chose not to use it. Yeah, that was really crazy to experience.
Are you a early morning worker or a late night worker?
I have loved being an early morning, but circumstances push me to being a late night person. So yeah.
Do you think fitness is important for the thinking work that you do? And I know you mentioned yoga, but I want your perspective on this.
I feel overall well-being is basis on which we create everything. If that's shaky, then whatever we create will also be very limited.
So with this, we come to the conclusion of the rapid fire round. You attended the, I think, the Isha Leadership Academy program. And what was your experience before going to that program? And what are the significant changes or mindset change that you bought into the company after going through that leadership program?
It was a very powerful program, mainly because it was a lot of peer-to-peer learning. You had people who were chief human resource officers or CXOs coming from different organizations such as Google, Amazon, many organizations, and everyone was Isha itself. There were Brahman. Everyone was openly sharing with each other about what are the best practices that are working for them? What are the mistakes they have done that we should not be doing? So this was the peer group that was there for the program. The biggest takeaways for me personally, the first thing is human is not a resource. That's the biggest takeaway. It's unlimited potential. If if we know how to look at it as potential and how to work with it as potential, it's not a resource that gets spent. The second most important learning was that you never hire a person or you never get a teammate to solve a problem. You always look for a person to build the organization. So don't hire people because I have a painful problem right now and let me get someone to solve this today's painful problem. Let's get someone who will be a great companion for the next many years to come. So that was the second biggest learning that I had from the program. The third biggest learning was there are two type of companies, and there might be many, but we learned about two kinds of companies. One where as the company scales, the culture breaks and culture becomes weaker and weaker. And the other kind of company is a company where as the company scales, the culture becomes stronger and stronger. You know how to possibly be a company where as the company scales, the culture becomes stronger was a very big as well. So these were the top three learnings, I would say, from that program. There were many more, but these are the top three.
Absolutely, and this basically we have spoken about how you spend a disproportionate amount of time onboarding someone. You've already walked us through the principles or the learnings that you have from this program, but can you walk us through some of your company's core process to basically onboard a particular person? And this is so because some of the audience that is listening to us would like to know, or if they want to apply to Hyperverge, what to expect. What to be prepared for. That's the perspective we want to know from you.
So these are two parts to what you have asked. One part is what do we do with respect to how do we select new teammates who we are excited about joining Hyperverse? And the second part is what should a person be looking for if they're applying to Hyperverse? I'll address the first part. So various kinds of organizations are built, right? Some organizations are built where, 2, 3 years, let's scale fast, let's exit, let's get a multi-million dollar exit, everyone makes money, end of, and then everyone goes their own way. The other kind of organizations are where you are looking at Zoho, right? It has been around for such a long period of time where you are building an organization over a few decades. So if you are looking at building an organization over few decades, like Hyperverge is, then the most important thing to build is people, right? Because you will not build that multi-decade organization, but you will build a strong team that will, or rather, you will make happen a strong team that will end up making happen a much larger organization. So, in our process, we are looking for obviously everything that every company looks for: skill, maturity, integrity, ability to work well in team. So many things that all of us look for. But beyond all of that, we also look for alignment with respect to our long-term vision, right? Our long-term vision is not about how each of us become millionaires or whatever. It's about how do we make possibly a difference to a million people's life. So we look at that alignment and we end up meeting a lot of people who are extremely clear about something like that. We also end up meeting a lot of people who are really smart, but then they are looking for, something in the next 2 years. They are looking at, they want to be here and then they want to jump to another place where they will, do that and things like that. So we try to look at people who will build the organization over the next few decades with us.
Thank you for sharing that journey. We are trying to basically create this community around education with the experience that you have from Lemma Labs and teaching a lot of folks in terms of technology. And do you have any advice for tech communities and what should they be focusing on and how the education should be looking like within this company so that they can scale communities and impart the right education at a cost that is minimal for everybody to undertake? Any advice for communities such as us?
See, for anything like this to work, the one thing I have observed in education is there are some people who are needed who tirelessly work over many years without asking the question, what is in it for me, right? Every brilliant teacher that has inspired me in some way had maybe not 100% altruistic, but had some element of this, right? That they are willing to go beyond what they are needed to do, beyond what is expected out of them, rather, to go out there and do something beyond all of that, right? And in many places, this could be a little bit of a thankless job in terms of just because you go out of your way doesn't necessarily mean that you may make more money or something like that. What I have seen is that every time I see a teacher who is willing or a committed community member who is willing to do whatever it takes without asking the question, what is in it for me? If three, four, five people like this happen, then naturally that community over the years grows and thrives. I feel that is the most fundamental bit. Usually communities break because for a set of people it's relevant in life at some point of time, then they outgrow it or they have different interests, they have different ideas, etc., and they go all of them go their own way. So that I feel is the most fundamental.
Absolutely. And thank you for sharing these learnings, Kedar. It has been a wonderful journey going through all of these aspects. I, for myself, learned a lot and will definitely keep so many of these learnings with me. With this, we come to the end of the podcast. And hey, Kedar, thank you for sharing your journey with us, your learnings, and the story of HyperVerge. I, for myself, learned a lot. I'm sure there's a lot to take away for the audience here. And thank you for coming to our podcast, and it was wonderful talking to you.
Thank you guys. Thanks for calling me for the podcast. It has been a pleasure. The way this whole thing was planned, I did find that you guys did a lot of homework before this. So I'm sure that each podcast that you guys are conducting is only getting better and better. I would urge everyone to subscribe to Co-Learning Lounge, the YouTube channel, and join the community. I think it's a genuine effort in the direction of building a community. It's important that we support it.
We would like to thank Actor.ai for sponsoring this podcast. If writing minutes of the meeting feels like a task, invite Actor.ai's robot to the meeting and let it note down the meeting minutes.